Hello and welcome back to Editing Aloud, back my first Editing Aloud of the year. And something really sort of fortuitous happened yesterday, not in terms of the event itself, but the time at which it occurred. Maria Ramos announced she was quitting as CEO of Absa Bank at the end of next month, probably this month. And it happened in time for both the Financial Mail and Business Day to get the full story. And in fact, Rob Rose, you guys did rather well on the AFM, given that your deadlines. You've got a column in it and you've got a story about it. Why is she going and what does it mean for Absa?
Well, she said that she wanted to resign a few years ago, but Barclays asked her to stay on to manage the process of separation. So she wanted to leave.
She was on the Barclays board as well,
wasn't she? Yeah, she was on the Barclays board. But she had been there, I think, at that stage, 2016, sort of 7 years. She's now been there 10 years.
Yeah.
And I think she's right when she says, you know, a CEO's lifespan shouldn't be longer than, say, 7 years. So she wants to now go and do other things. And it means that Absa, now separate from Barclays, has to look for another chief executive, but which apparently gets found.
But you say in your column they've been looking for a replacement for almost a year, right? May 2018, and they've got one.
Well, apparently they've got one, but they haven't released the name yet. The Reserve Bank is supposedly looking at this candidate.
What are your guesses?
Sure, that's difficult to say. It's really difficult to say. There were a couple of people talked about. There was.
It's going to be a black. You said it's going to be a black person, but from outside Absa.
Yeah, black South African. So Francois Groepe, who resigned from the Reserve Bank as deputy governor recently, was one name that people were talking about. People were talking about Kennedy Bongani. He might be a bit of an outlier. But yeah, I mean, you know, who would you choose? It's difficult if you come from another bank to go and work at Absa. So there's a small group of people who've worked in regulation who could do it. So I suppose it's a tough call.
And what's her record been like? I mean, you say here that back in 2008, Absa was the market leader in home loans, and it's now slipped to third. I mean, I haven't been an Absa client for a very long time, I have to say. I mean,
for a reason,
long,
probably.
Well, I mean, but long before Maria got involved with it, it was a very frustrating bank.
It was. I mean, I think her record is people respect her tremendously, but the bank slipped a lot. I mean, it went from 31% in home loans to 21%. And part of it is Barclays, when they owned the bank, didn't want it to take on extra risk. It had stumbled just before she arrived with huge losses in the mortgage portfolio. And Barclays, the last thing it wanted was a huge disaster happening at the foot of Africa. So they took the pedal off risk, and it meant that Absa just didn't write the business they should have done. So it was tough for Maria. I mean, it's not necessarily, you can't say the fact that Absa has been the laggard of all the banks, and has been in terms of share price and in terms of market share. You can't say that that's entirely Maria. I mean, a large part of it is Barclays.
But Ron, what took into account that they came in when 2005, and then 2007 in the financial crisis, Barclays almost went bankrupt, remember?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I mean the executives at the time were facing criminal charges over the deal they got from Qatar to rescue them. So you can imagine they wouldn't have been very risk averse.
Yeah.
So the timing possibly couldn't have been worse, possibly, for Absa to be taken over by them.
But Ron, what sort of person do you look for to take over the bank?
I mean, right now, what Barclays needs is very aggressive, but they're falling behind on all metrics, right? So it needs mortgages in terms of new business tech. So they need someone who's going to come in there with a fresh broom and very aggressive in nature. I know Ramos and I guess the group, the guy who just left now, kind of very much steeped in that old treasury mindset. I think we're more like, we'll call them like safe CEOs. So whoever comes into this bank.
I mean, Francois Groepe doesn't strike me as being a likely candidate.
Yeah, he doesn't strike me as like a Michael Jordan or anyone of that nature.
But are there black South Africans you know who are a Michael Jordan?
There's quite like we were speaking to Rob earlier on. If they're saying it'll take about 10 months to replace this guy, whatever's coming in may be from a related industry. And I think people like Kennedy Bongani, but I mean, you need chance takers. You need someone who just that had Kennedy Bongani when he was at Standard Bank before he had a bit of a falling out with that executive. He was just overly ambitious at the time. They say he was a bit overly ambitious, and he was likely to take over before Sim Shepherd-Hala, and he built new businesses within Standard Bank. So he's got that pedigree, and he has that, I mean, that zest for it. But whoever comes to Absa, I think it needs to be someone from that station who can go out there and go fight for market share and just make Absa this tech-savvy bank that it's never been over the past 10 years. And because of having a broke owner is a problem. Having a broke owner, it kind of limits what you
and
can do.
Sikonati, so what happens now to Maria Ramos? Because we're in this funny situation here. She's only 60. and presumably is not going to leave the country. And presumably, the president has jobs to fill that she could do. He's looking for a head of the PRC. He's looking for a head of SARS. And from what we hear in Business Day yesterday, he may soon be looking for a finance minister, which we'll come back later to, by the way.
Look, she's only 60. She doesn't qualify yet to be president. So
that's yeah, no, you've got to be much older.
You've got to be much older.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, I don't see her going back to that hectic life. I mean, she's had three careers already, great careers in the government, in terms of the Treasury DG. And being Transnet. Chief executive of Transnet.
Yeah.
Those were I wouldn't want, if I were her, I wouldn't want to go back into the government.
Well,
but
it may not be about what she wants to do. This may just be about your duty.
Indeed. So we are looking for a SARS commissioner.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's one great job that she could get in and do. And of course, she doesn't have that SARS baggage about which camp or whatever.
Well, so she does have the baggage. I mean, she, by virtue of the fact that she's kind of
close to
Trevor Manuel's side and the Thabo Mbeki, so she comes with political. So even going in there, appointing Ramos for Ramaphosa, it's kind of the risk. Kind of you bringing back Thabo Mbeki's people. So it's kind of that whole factionalism battle in the ANC that still exists.
Is that
so
avoidable?
You're actually bringing a great point.
She's kind of politically.
He's agreeing
a
with you.
Yeah, amazing.
It's a precious.
She's a hard sell in the ANC to bring her back in a position.
You are raising a very important point, and you're absolutely right. Mm. What you don't mention is the skill she'd bring in any of those positions. Mm. I don't see anyone better than Maria, but would she want to do it? If I were her, I would be sitting under a tree in Mozambique.
I would go
just enjoying my time.
Or she go to PLC, Barclays PLC. I remember that there was a time when we all thought she may be considered to go run PLC. And I was like, maybe this is what. But PLC has got credibility-wise, no credibility in Barclays.
I would take
get out of
all the non-executive roles that will be flying her way, in which you do next to nothing. And get paid all the money, like more than Busasa pays people.
Yeah,
that's what I would do.
And legally too. I mean, he gets actually
legally
transferred
too,
into your
absolutely.
Bank account. They take the tax off.
I repeat again.
You don't have to appear in front of the deputy chief justice.
I doubt she's short of cash, though. That would be her motivation.
Short of cash. So you go into the finance minister and you go argue with people like Julius Malema. You have to handle people like Ace Magashule. You go into SARS and you start all over again, be the DG of Treasury. She's done all of that. She would be the best candidate for any of those roles if she would be available.
Yeah.
But if I were her, why would I do it?
No, she's got a civic duty. She feels a strong public sense. I mean, that's why I think the SARS job would be great for her. A set 2-year period, go and clean up SARS for 2 years.
The president has to fill this job, fill the SARS job particularly pretty quickly. What did you guys make of Carol Payton's column yesterday? And I hadn't seen this before, that Tito Mboweni was almost certainly not going to be the finance minister after the election, and that he's basically lost interest in the job and is largely absent. Yeah. You were in Davos. Luke, was he around?
I mean, you have to take it back. I mean, in fairness to Tito Mboweni,
he
didn't make a secret of the fact that he didn't want the job.
Yeah.
Whenever he spoke anyway, he would say, I didn't want the job, or the president made me do it. And he always talked about being bullied in half-joking terms. I mean, in Davos, it's all out in the public record. So he was hardly there, really. I mean, people said... I think,
he didn't come to meetings.
A couple of functions where the president spoke, he actually made comments about Tito, like joking about Tito being there. Oh, saying, oh, Tito's here, that kind of thing.
Was he writing petitions for Afrikaans?
I don't know. But he's never, he's never made a secret of the fact that this is not his passion, that he felt like, that he hasn't really shown.
But there's a sort of mini crisis that brews there, Ron. I mean, Who could be a finance minister for Cyril Ramaphosa come the end of the elections in May? Let's say Tito lasts that long. He does the budget, probably largely done by the Treasury themselves.
By Treasury themselves.
Mm.
I the person I thought of, because I'm also with Lukhanyo Tsisombedi, he looks very disinterested, right? But yeah. I thought Jabu Moleketi, Trevor Manuel's deputy, and he was like shoo-in the next finance minister for Trevor was going in. And when Trevor, when Mbeki was recalled, he left. And he kept pretty clean slate. So I think...
Isn't he hideously gainfully employed in some private sector?
Exactly, he is. But there's still that... he's someone like I guess, Mariam, who has a public sector call, who's untainted by any faction. And I think if he comes back in as a finance... instinctively, the person I'd call if I was Ramaphosa is go to Chavo and try to get him to come back. The guy is well versed in treasury, and everyone was pretty comfortable with him being our next finance minister. So every shoe in for the next. So I don't think, but you know, no, Mboweni really does look disinterested in the whole in his job since he's been there. So I'm not surprised by Carol's piece that's likely not to be there come the next.
What do you think, Sikonathi? I mean, is it something that is relatively easy to fix?
It's not easy to find the best finance minister you can find, and a lot of people, yourself included, I think you have mentioned before, Zweli Mkhize, but his name keeps popping up wherever corruption is mentioned.
Yes.
So you don't want...
Oh, he wants it badly.
He wants it, oh, does he?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
But he just doesn't have the...
But he keeps shooting himself in the foot every time. Check Business Day today, new claims, corruption claims at the PAC, he's right at the center of it, with his niece, Busisiwe, one of the non-executive directors.
Yeah.
So he's disqualified, effectively. And of course, we lost your other favorite, Malusi Kigaba, correctly. So,
sorry about that.
So we may.
It's a blow to all of us.
We may really have
but it's a big game for Candy Crush. So.
But Kigaba has done that already, hasn't he? Been there, done that.
With
So again, I have to agree with Ron that. Jabu Moleketi.
Wow,
so there's Jabu Moleketi, and we really might have to beg Maria Ramos. And in Davos again, she was right next to the president all the time. Am I correct?
Yeah.
There's a great rapport going on there.
She is going to do another government job.
What about somebody off field? Somebody would somebody like, you know, I'm thinking like the deputy governor, Daniel Minella, for example, his term ends in June. What about
apparently that's going to be renewed. And he'll carry on as deputy governor there while they search for another governor. But there's some really critical jobs. Guys, one of us might get offered one of these jobs.
Public Enterprises Minister.
Praveen
again, I don't think Praveen is going
to... must break up Public Enterprises. That's one of those that must be gone.
Public Enterprises is not necessary at all. It's just a department to facilitate tenders. That's what it was. It was meant to actually break up the companies for privatization, to prepare them, which it did very well until Thabo Mbeki lost power.
But you don't want these companies attached to their departments. I mean, like, you don't want Transnet run by Bladens and Mundy if you don't mind.
No. But you kind of want it because if policy is set and Transnet there, I think it kind of works. But like, if policy is set here and then you have Praveen saying something else and he controls Transnet.
Let's call it what it is. You don't want Bladens and Mundy running anything.
No. I understand that. But I mean, but you've got, you've got...
energy
in fact, at Transport, Blade could run SAA and Transnet.
Yeah.
And energy could take over the pipeline. January has been a busy month for Cyril Ramaphosa. He's been to Davos. He's opened the ANC's election manifesto. Lots of big meetings and rallies in KwaZulu-Natal. Davos, he'd been to India. And wherever he's gone, he's been talking about putting the country right, putting the party right. And in Davos, he kind of upped it a little bit and started talking about our 9 wasted years and how we had to reverse those, and a lot of work was going to go into it. And I believe he said the same thing in India. And Quanita Hunter, the Sunday Times political writer, who was with him in India, is with us on the telephone now. But what makes the story interesting, Quanita, is that the ex-president Zuma has hit back rather strongly at this in a letter that he posted on Twitter, I think it was yesterday, basically saying there's 9 years wasted. Of course they weren't wasted. I mean, it's the first time that they are now openly and publicly disagreeing. What does it mean?
All right, so initially, when Cyril Ramaphosa was on the campaign trail within ANC structures, I obviously followed him quite closely, and then saw him portray this message over and over again about, you know, things not being done well, or the years that were before his administration, you know, were bad years for the country and bad years for the party, but now they're on a path of renewal. And like you said, Peter, when he went to Davos, he really upped the ante a little bit, and then said formally, you know, that things were really bad during the Zuma years, in not that many words, but you know, and this is what he's doing to sort of sort things out. When he was in India, it was quite interesting that basically in the discussions, formally with the government of India and in the high-level talks and among business leaders, it really state capture found its way into those discussions. There were discussions around arms procurement, the corruption that now came up. You know, issues about a direct route to make it easy for business, the issue of the SAA Gupta influence came up. Similarly with ESCOM. So then Ramaphosa then says to business leaders, he says, you know, our institutions were infected by a spate of corrupt activities, and we've lost our way, and now we're finding our way back. This seemed to, this together with comments by former, current finance minister, Tito Mboweni, seemed to really upset the former president, Jacob Zuma. And he then now goes on Twitter and says, you know, this is not, it has not been wasted years, and then goes on to sort of list all his achievements, which obviously we've heard before. Zuma's long-time sort of soliloquy has always been, you know, we have a good story to tell. Yeah. And so now he was sort of reiterating that, and that, you know, he cannot be blamed. Those were not wasted years. But also quite interestingly, he said towards the end of last year that people who blame things on him and people who accuse him of, you know, what went wrong in the country shouldn't sort of exclude themselves from their role in what government did wrong. Yeah. So I think that, you know, Zuma was trying to sort of be, you know, or rather he sort of tried to you know punch or deliver the first punch, and now you know it's going to be the first of many attacks as long as that narrative
what does it mean? And let me just come to the panel here as well. What does it mean, Sikonati, for the actual campaign? I mean, can they? The whole thing about the sort of unity campaign was that Zuma would campaign for the ANC along with everybody else. But can they campaign if they're fighting with each other?
And he's already started campaigning. He was in Gauteng leading the campaign, door to door, telling people that the ANC has learnt from its mistake and it's fixed them. Now, will they be able to deploy him? I don't know. He possibly does not even want them to deploy him.
Yeah.
He will just go and tell people whatever he wants to tell them. It's going to be a very interesting campaign.
How can you have a if you're campaigning on a platform of moral renewal and you have Jacob Zuma campaigning for you, it completely undercuts your message. Any gains they might get.
Well, in certain constituencies it will, but not in all necessarily.
But then it's factional campaigning. He's campaigning for himself and his particular faction.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're an ANC voter, do you know who the factions are? I mean, do you know what faction you might be voting? You know, do you even know what faction you're in?
Jacob Zuma, all his political campaigns for office, he steered away from the middle class, from the clever blacks, 702 blacks. He always went to the squatter camps, which is where he was deployed.
Yeah.
So he'll go to the squatter camps, he'll go to the rural areas. Most people in those areas don't even know who the president is right now. I can tell you a lot of them, certainly in my village, are still voting for Nelson Mandela.
Yeah. No, fair enough. And Luke, I mean, in your experience, does this kind of division sort of heal itself sort of in the interests of party unity up to election, or it's just now open war and there's no hiding it?
I suppose, like Sikonati is saying, we may be talking to different constituencies. I mean, some people might argue, for example, you know, these debates they have about the central bank or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you and I might see that as a symptom of disunity.
Yeah.
Some people, it might just be a question of them talking to different constituencies. I mean, they are Lesetsha Kanyafa still would talk to me and say, like, central bank independence is sacrosanct and all of that. And then, so that talks to my constituency that maybe they think I speak to. But then maybe when Ismail Khashoggi is somewhere else, he talks to an EFF constituency there and he tells them we've got to nationalize the bank and doesn't necessarily explain that nationalizing the bank is not going to lead to any change of policy.
Yeah.
So like maybe there is some kind of, it's not just madness, maybe there is some kind of like a plan behind it.
Method to the madness. Is there anything, Ron, that that Cyril can do to, or should he even be worried about it? I mean, he can't stop saying what he's been saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's important for Cyril right now going to these elections is, I mean, the splinter parties and so on. He just needs Zuma talking, vote for ANC. He might sprout his own views about how his 9 years were that differ to him, but I think for Ramaphosa, it doesn't really matter. As long as Zuma's sprouting the vote ANC line and not giving fuel to these splinter parties, these supposed Zuma parties that are coming up in KZN.
Yeah.
And KZN is important. I mean, when I was talking about Zuma being poor for the rural vote, I don't think in the rural is much of a problem. It's like it's in the urban, the Durban and Peter Marisburg when it comes to KZN, where it's very important to keep some harmony. We're all voting for ANC. They're not very trusting of Ramaphosa and this new Prumi is coming in. So just settle that, get elections done, and then after that, I don't think Zuma will matter in the next election for the ANC. So it's just about getting us past this first hurdle. It was pretty much like when they first ousted
Mbeki. So there'll be people, weren't there, Juanita, putting out fires all over the sort of ANC even today, right? I mean, he didn't mean that, Mr. President, and he didn't mean that, Mr. Ex-President. And then, you know, probably they'll end up having a talk or something that everybody will, you know, get pictures of.
Yeah, it's quite difficult that, you know, when Ramaphosa campaigns and when he has these talks, he's faced with the stark reality of the Zuma years. It's in his face, and he has to respond to these concerns by ordinary people, like I saw, you know, in a township on the outskirts of Pietermaritzburg or at the state house in, you know, New Delhi. So, he's not going to be able to evade those type of discussions without him saying, yes, I acknowledge that those years were bad. So it's a matter of now of not poking the bear. It's a matter of trying to appease to the electorate and to, you know, interested parties to say, okay, fine, we understand things went wrong, but then turning around and telling former President Jacob Zuma, I'm not directly making reference to you, but just, you know, conceding that things did go wrong.
I just want to divert a question quickly to Siko Nathi. Tomorrow, no, not tomorrow, on Friday, Shamila Batohi, the new head of the NPA, starts her job. Is she going to make a difference to the politics of the election campaign? I mean, if she starts arresting people like on Tuesday.
Well, if she starts arresting people
the next week,
she'll certainly be arresting the people that are now leading the ANC. But definitely she's a huge plus to the clean-up message.
Yeah.
We're cleaning up, but can you really clean up without arresting Jacob Zuma, without arresting Ismail Khashoggi, without arresting Malusi Kigaba and Lee Brown and
all of that may be possible. Apparently what I discovered to my surprise the other day is that she doesn't need the scorpions to do that. Inside the NPA Act, there is the right to create what they call a special director, an investigating director.
And she's already said that she wants one.
She can create multiple ones. She can create an investigating director to look rather like this Robert Mueller in the States, who's investigating Trump's links with the Russians. Nobody can stop these investigations. Except the president. Once they are, you know, on go, they can require that police work with them. They could call you and me to give the evidence. They have incredible powers, which she's apparently going to use. Juanita, what do you think of what's happening in the DA? Is this the beginning of the liberal social democratic split? Helen Zille tweets that she's going to start a tax revolt if there are no arrests after the Zondo Commission. Musi Mamani and the leadership are quick to leap to their feet and say, no, we don't agree with tax revolts. Helen, doesn't have a job after this election. I wonder whether she might be looking for a new party or a new political home.
Yeah, the thing about the DA is that it's having an identity crisis in the center of a factional battle that's ongoing, and that is just as a result of the party growing and more people coming in, more ideas and divergent views, and maybe the people that were at the core of the party sort of almost, you know, feeling like their control on the party is slipping, the likes of your Helen Ziller. Now, Helen Ziller has been a, you know, a loose cannon for a bit for the party, and she has, you know, said many, many things. Her latest comments on a tax revolt is, you know, no different to her comments on colonialism. So, I mean, she has been a thorn in the path of Nusi Maimane. It's just that the timing, that it comes at a time where the DA, A, is trying to get its house in order, and B, try to sort of intensify its election efforts with the Votek registration campaign that happened last week. Yeah. So the DA really, really is going to be, you know, have to reprioritize itself. But history has shown us, when there's this push and pull phenomenon that happens within political parties between, you know, the has-beens and the nows, you know, it doesn't really end well. The campaign suffers.
Thanks, Cornita. Speaking as a has-been, Rob Rose, what happens to Nusi Maimane if he doesn't improve the DA vote from last time?
Sure. I mean, he'll be in a really tough position. I mean, he's really warding off the spit that you're talking about. And the latest, I suppose, polling figures suggest that they're going to be absolutely static at 22% or so from the last election. So I think the identity crisis will become far more acute, and it'll lead to, I think, a split after that would suggest that if you're not improving as a DA, you're not increasing your, especially given the promises he made, then I think
big
that's...
Big trouble. That's all we've got time for. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you again next week. Bye.